Who the Wild Things Are with Ryan McGuire.
You gotta listen to your body.
Oh my God, maybe, you know, I could get out there. I could do this.
Let's take a ride. Find your wild side. Real stories. See with your own eyes.
It's so beautiful.
I'm gonna have the best time out here.
Yeah, I was in tears. I was just like, that's the best, man.
Welcome back to Who the Wild Things Are. My name is Ryan McGuire, and I'm here to bring you conversations with the most wild folks on the planet. If you're enjoying the podcast, please leave us a rating and review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you enjoy the episode, share it with a friend. Appreciate you guys. Let's get it going. Well, Bobby, great to have you here.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me, dude. This is an honor to be on here, and I love what you're doing. The content that you guys put out is so awesome, and what you're doing as an athlete. So thanks for having me, man. Like, I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm super stoked you're here. Obviously, I've been on your podcast a couple times, so now we're kind of in reversed roles here.
Yeah. Oh, fun. Shit, I'm nervous now. What are you going to ask me? Can I curse on here?
You can curse.
Okay, because I have no filter, so.
No, we don't.
I'm pretty rough on that. Those edges, I guess.
The way I think about it is, like, there's a lot of outdoor podcasts out there. I'm sure, like, maybe half of them don't curse.
So yeah.
If that's not your thing, just, yeah, there's other ones.
Yeah. I know of a few. We get occasional messages on the mountainside too that are like, hey, could you stop with the foul language and stuff like that? And I'm just myself, you know? That's the biggest thing when I'm on it.
Yeah.
I want it to be genuine.
Here's my thing is, my mom is like the biggest angel I know and super Christian lady. She curses. So I'm like,
let's go.
Nobody else has drawn that line.
Shout out moms. Yeah. Mom. That's awesome.
If she's cursing, I'm cursing. That's the ship we're going to die on.
Hell yeah.
So tell me about how the podcast started with the whole mountainside. Obviously, you're from here in Colorado. We actually probably didn't grow up that far from each other. Where your studio is now is close to where I grew up.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, it's, man, it's a long story. I don't know how much time we have today, but if I go on too long, just let me know. This is my passion. And, you know, I think it's evolved into something that I never thought it was going to be. It was, I guess about 3 years ago, I started listening to podcasts, and music has always played a huge part in my life. And that's been my background, my career. I've been really fortunate to work with some amazing artists, on all levels. But I think, you know, once the podcast game, or once I was introduced to the podcast game, it was the first form of media after watching all those rock stars and what they go through with morning interviews on morning radio and television shows and all that sort of stuff. It was the first time that I felt like, okay, these people are authentically having a conversation, and it just felt more genuine and an authentic platform, right?
Yeah.
So much more than like social media. It's really the only reason that I'm on social media. Is for the podcast. And I just feel like you cannot fake sitting down and talking to somebody for hours on end. You know, some of my podcasts have gone 4 hours, or some of the podcasts on the mountainside have gone, you know, 4+ hours. And that's just because there's no real time limit on it. I mean, some of the guests that we have on have time restrictions and stuff like that. So sometimes we cut them short. Today, I cut one short so I could come down here and record with you.
We appreciate it.
Yeah, man. And I just love the fact that people can be genuine. They can have time to articulate their conversation. I think we live in such a fast-paced world now where everything's kind of at your disposal. And it's really easy to portray to be somebody that you're not. And I felt like this was the first time that I ever felt like I wanted to be in the limelight, I guess, a little bit, and
yeah,
wanted to be genuine and tell my story. And more importantly, it was kind of, it was started, well, I guess I need to dial it back here a little bit. So my original premise was, you know, living in Colorado and growing up in Colorado was an awesome place to grow up. I grew up right in Evergreen, right where the studio is at, like a mile from there. And I didn't grow up with a whole lot of money. You know, single mom, multiple brothers and sisters and stuff like that. So there wasn't a whole lot of us going outside of Colorado. My family homesteaded some parts of Evergreen, which is kind of crazy. And some of them have never even seen the ocean, you know? Mm-hmm. So like that was traveling and all that stuff was just really like foreign to me. And like, so we spent all of our time in the backcountry, in the woods around there, in the stream, hunting, fishing, you know, playing with pine cones, using them as grenades, like playing Rambo in the woods with stick guns and just like all that sort of like, just outdoor stuff that you do as a kid. Like I was always the kid with the dirty face, I'm sure, and dirty feet, you know, and like jumping BMX bikes. So to come full circle with it, you know, I took a career in rock and roll, and at one point, Evergreen, Colorado was the worst place in the world, you know, at 18 or 19. It was kind of, I'm never going to make it here. I want to go see the world. I want to travel. I was kind of the black sheep of my family where a lot of them thought, like, why would I ever leave Colorado? Mm. So I moved to Hermosa Beach, California, and took a career there with a bunch of, you know, high-level rock stars and got to go all over the world on private planes and million-dollar tour buses and that was epic. I wouldn't trade any of it. But it all kind of came full circle when I had kids. And, you know, I wanted to be around for my kids.
Yeah.
So my daughter was born at 13. So I quit rock and roll touring. And I guess at that point is when I kind of started questioning is like, do we want to live in California? Is this the right spot? Is this the right spot to raise kids? I mean, it changes your life. You don't have kids, do you?
No, not yet.
Okay, yeah.
One day. So,
yeah, it definitely, it's all for the better for me anyways. And would I still love to be traveling the world? Yeah, absolutely, man. I love going to South America. I loved going to South Africa and, you know, all these rural spots that I got to go and just the different cultures I got to experience, you know? So that was super cool. But as soon as the kids came up, it was like, man, where do I want them to grow up? And it wasn't Hermosa Beach. And I kind of went back to my childhood of us playing outside and being in the mud and being in the streams and catching trout and just, you know, that outdoor life. And then it really made me start to question, like, what shaped me as a person, you know, like what adversity did I face? What adversity did I want my kids to face? Because they're growing up in a totally different environment than I did, you know? So we moved back to Colorado. I came back and I was just, and not that I hadn't come back and visited before, but even when I came back and visited before, I was always like, the first thing I wanted to do is like, let's go fly fishing or let's go shoot bows or let's go do that, you know, because that's what I grew up as a kid doing. And I was just like really brokenhearted almost at just the influx of people that were here using the outdoor space incorrectly, right? Mm. And I didn't know how to help that, you know, or how to educate people. So that was the original premise of the Mountainside, was to kind of be an outdoor, like, education, kind of bridge that gap from the very beginner to, like, very novice, right? Like, just fill in those blanks in between, because I think that that's where most of, like, bank erosion and not knowing how to pack out your trash and safety issues. I think it's right in between there. Like if you're a novice, you kind of know what's going on. You've been to REI, you've got the right stuff. You know how to pack out your trash. You know, to bring a shovel with you, you know, for bathroom purposes, you know, like, so pulling into a campsite and, you know, when you have not that much free time and having it littered with trash, even if it's in the fire pit or whatever, that's a bummer. It's a bummer when you pull into a campsite and you see where somebody went to the bathroom for the 3 or 4 days that they were there every time, because there's just toilet paper on top of the ground, you know? So like there's some etiquette to the outdoors, right? So instead of being that Colorado dubbed native, which I don't really like, but being born and raised in Colorado, there's so many of those people that are just like, they're very anti new people coming in and trying thing. And it's just like, it's just negative energy. Right. And I've never been a fan of that. So I guess I turned it around. It was like, oh, I'm going to start a podcast to kind of help educate people on how to properly use the outdoors. So this was pre-COVID, like right before COVID hit. And, I had like Colorado Parks and Wildlife lined up was the first episode. The second episode was Alpine Search and Rescue. Didn't go that way. Pandemic hit. Government agencies were shut down. Everything that they had agreed to was like, you know, they couldn't do it because of government regulations.
The world.
And I had I just built a studio. So I was like, well, damn, I guess I got to pivot now. Right. So then it kind of turned into, you know, it was the biggest blessing during the pandemic. I want to say that too, because we were an essential business. So I was able to keep going. I was able to be around people and we did it safe at the beginning, you know, cause everybody was nervous. And so we just really had to pivot. And then it turned into more of like, okay, I can still do this, but let's do it on an individual basis, like one-on-one interviews, forget the government agencies. Let me reach out to some people like Donnie Dust. Let me reach out to some people like Ryan McGuire who are doing extraordinary things, are a good lead by example person on social media, in their podcast space, in those sort of spaces. And let me have a one-on-one conversation with them. It's not like anybody that I have in it, I genuinely want to talk to them. And that has been the biggest blessing, man. Like I had no idea going into it. I'm so glad it didn't go the way I intended it to.
Right.
Because this hits so much, or the mountainside hits so much more close to home. And I think people relate to it more than just having like, we have had Colorado Parks and Wildlife in and some of those government agencies, but the conversation gets a little bit sterile because they can't always say what they want to say. They're also one of those people that asked me to censor myself, you know, or like take curse words out of the episodes. And I haven't bent for that, but they've still been willing to come in and seen positive results.
Yeah.
Do I not try to do that better a little bit? Yeah, of course, man. But yeah, I guess that was kind of the catalyst for the mountainside. And then, you know, as it started to evolve, I think the biggest thing was, you know, for a minute there, I started chasing like, oh, now I'm doing this with a guest every episode. Now I have to get a guest every week, right? And then it was kind of like, I started kind of chasing like, who are the big guests? Who do I want to go after? Like that sort of thing. And I got caught up in that for a few episodes and I got burned on a couple deals. And then I really had to like take a step back and be like, no, I just, whoever I genuinely want to talk to. So it's really kind of my own greed. Like this morning I got to hang out with a guy that was, you know, a top flight special operations, Green Beret Ranger tab, like the highest level from 9/11 to right up until like 3 or 4 years ago. And now has this amazing nonprofit. And like to be able to spend 2 hours of uninterrupted time with an individual like that, that has so much life experience in such a short time and is doing extraordinary things, is the love and passion behind it now. So,
yeah. And I think it makes friendships so much deeper. People, I guess you wouldn't understand it unless you have a podcast or if you go on podcasts often, but there ends up being like a very deep friendship. That's it's not typical for a first meeting because everything is so surface level in our lives. Like if you talk to someone on social media, you kind of have your guard up. You don't believe most of what they're saying. You don't even know who that person is. But if you sit down with a podcast, it's like the bullshit's going to come out within the 2 hours. Like you're going
to Yeah, like all the bullshit I just spit a few minutes ago.
I'm just saying like
it's thinking out loud, really.
It is. But yeah. Eventually like you're going to realize like either I really like how this person carries themselves or they're kind of full of shit and it's going to happen in 2 hours. If you're looking at a bunch of 10-second clips, you might not be able to tell. Like I can just give you my best side for the entire time. But if it's 2 hours, we're going to know each other pretty well.
Yeah. I think that has been, I would suggest this to anybody that's starting a podcast and especially a one-on-one interview type podcast. definitely vet your guests before they come on, man. Like, have a conversation with them. One thing that we're trying to do a little bit more is get a bit more immersive. Like, go do something with them prior to recording or something like that. And it just, it makes it better. There's a little bit more of a bond. But the best thing about podcasting for me is I think that, and I've talked about this ad nauseum on the mountainside, and I think you and I have spoken about it. My two favorite places to have a conversation with somebody is either in the backcountry or in a podcast studio. And more importantly, the podcast studio, right? Because it's comfortable. You don't have any distractions. It's just you and I sitting in a room. My phone is completely turned off right now because I don't want to have any distractions.
I don't even know where my phone is.
Yeah. And so I think it's like I think why it resonates so much with people is it is a genuine conversation that is missed in today's society.
Yeah.
People aren't having conversations like this.
And I think you are right that if you can do the immersive bit with the guests, it does make it better. And I've been trying to do it too. It is hard because everyone's so busy. But so like right now we're looking at a horse. That's a horse ranch. And then on the other side is public land. So it's like I'm always asking guests if you want to go for a hike or a run or go to a cold plunge in the creek right before this. Like, let's go do it. And you kind of become friends with somebody before you even get in the podcast studio. And that's always a cool thing.
No, it's super awesome. And it gives you a minute to reflect on what you're doing, but it is hard with scheduling, right? A lot of the people that we're having on the mountainside now have like just crazy schedules. Crazy. Like, scheduling is hard, you know? So it's hard to have people be on time. It's hard to schedule it. And then to ask somebody like, you know, that has a ton of other responsibilities or something, A, you're asking for 3 or 4 hours of their time. Then they have to drive up the mountain. That's another, you know, hour minimum. So you're asking somebody to take 4 or 5 hours out of their day to come and podcast with you and sit down. And so you want to make that an enjoyable experience, but to ask them for a full day to like go to the archery range or something, it's difficult, man. So
yeah, that makes it even longer of a day. I think this year we're kind of opening back up the possibility on our podcast of doing remote. Like, when I got this studio, I was like, screw that. I'm never doing a remote podcast again. Like, because this is just different than doing it over a phone. It's a totally
different.
So I was like, I'm done with it.
So you're talking about not doing virtual podcasts? Or?
That's what I was
saying. Yeah.
But then I realized in order to get some guests, there's just no way the in-person will ever happen.
I'm struggling with that too, man. I just recently put my foot down this last year, and we didn't do I don't know if we did a virtual one in 2023.
We might have. Years are in studio.
Yeah, we might have done one or two right at the beginning of the year 20. I'd have to go back and look, and I don't have anybody here to fact check me. In my studio, I have somebody that fact checks me all the time because I'm always wrong. I think it's all the CTE in my life or whatever. But besides that, I really had a hard time with it because A, in our studio, or whether I was in a hotel room or wherever we were doing it from, there is a significant missing connection on the quality of content. Not that I didn't enjoy any of those conversations. It's just another hurdle, and there's some sort of barrier there that's just not natural.
Yeah, it's also like the timing for me. Mm-hmm. Like, you say something and then you kind of have to wait to see if it went through, and then you both talk at once, and then it just kind of interrupts the flow, and I don't know, I don't like it.
Yeah, I've totally kind of vowed it off now. I mean, unless it was somebody, I think you have to weigh it on, is this beneficial to the guest? So like John Norris, I went back and forth with him. If you don't know who John Norris is, shout out to him. You should definitely read his book, Hidden War. He's a California game warden that had to pivot and basically go in combating cartels that were making illegal grow operations in the state of California.
Was he on like Rogan? Or
he's been on a bunch of podcasts. Yeah, he's been on Rogan two or three times.
His story is crazy because I didn't know who you're talking about, but now that you're describing
Definitely look him up, man. He'd be a great guest for your podcast. incredible dude. Like, this guy signed up to like check hunting and fishing tags and all of a sudden became like a special operations dude with a dog team and doing hearse cast into national forest to combat guys that were using Vietnam tactics. Like, they would build punji pits, these cartels would, that like, and if you don't know what a punji pit is, it's basically a hole in the ground that they put bamboo spikes in and then they'll rub their own excrement on it or something. So basically you get infected and die. And jeez, not to mention like, I mean, so just all these crazy tactics, right? Like, super smart people, not to mention the people that he was arresting for some of the worst environmental damage that could be done to a place. That's what's happening. Your Doritos bag that's floating down Bear Creek right now is not that big of a deal. These guys are dumping like these horrible pesticides and herbicides and chemicals and diesel fuel. And I mean, stuff that some of the pesticides that they use aren't even legal in the US. So like if a human comes in contact with it, they can die. So anyways, John, like, having a conversation with somebody like that, like, I'm not going to pass on the opportunity. So yeah, I'm going to do my chances virtually. So you have to weigh it by like, is this beneficial to my message? And is the listener going to get something out of this? Because if it's just two guys having a conversation and like shooting the breeze, right? But
no, that guy's story is crazy. I never knew his name was John Norris. I remember listening to this podcast somewhere. It was like Friedman. It was a big pod. Like, mm-hmm. It was a big pod that I heard him on. And
he's been on a lot of them. His books are awesome too.
The story of him saying, so I think it was a marijuana grow, and they have like long stalks, right? So they're using this like insecticide. I think it's an insecticide.
Yes.
That then the mouse comes up and it eats whatever like the insect is, or just comes in contact with it, and the mouse dies right away. So it's dead next to the plant. Then the eagle swoops down, grabs the mouse, dies where it lays. So it's just like literally the chain of life, and they're all just dead right next to each other because anything that touches it.
Deer, anything, dead. Yeah.
So
including humans, man. It's crazy. There's been a ton of people that have been, and a lot of them are backcountry hunters because where these cartel grows and stuff are at, man, it's scary stuff. I'm so glad that Colorado doesn't really have the climate. I guess we do deal with some of it, but you know, that climate of Northern California is anything grows there. I mean, look at the Redwood National Forest, right? Yeah, so mean, like,
and weed is not one of those things that's like you need a perfect environment. It's like it's pretty resilient. Plant.
It's not only weed, man. They're having meth labs in the middle of national parks and stuff like that. Jesus. Like, it is unbelievable, and just there's no respect for anything in the environment. We've also had Ben Strawn on the podcast. I don't know if you're familiar with him or listen to his episodes. He's a wildland firefighter, superintendent for El Dorado Fire. I'm probably screwing that up. In Northern California. Awesome guy. Like 20 years wildland firefighting experience. So when they're out combating some of these fires that are close to home, he's run into stuff where there's a shotgun shell on like a piece of like fishing wire. It's booby traps, right? That they're setting up so people don't. But imagine if that's your kid running through. It makes me scared to go in the woods in Northern California.
It's absolutely wild. The other one he said was they have, they'll like chop off cow's feet and then they'll put the cow's feet under their shoes. Because there's wild cattle out there.
Oh, yeah.
And the tracking's so hard, so they just put the cattle underneath their tennis shoe, and then when they walk through the woods, they can't track them. It just looks like wild bent cattle.
These are not, they're not dumb people. No. And unfortunately, the laws and some of the, and I don't want to dive into politics because it's one of the worst subjects to talk about, but this is a major loophole that is in politics, from a federal level to a national level to a state level, that is lacking big time. Because part of John's story and part of his frustration with it all and why he still advocates for these operations to be carried out is, one, the impact to the environment is, it's the most horrific, grotesque thing that you could think of if you're really behind like supporting the environment, clean air, clean, all that sort of stuff. These guys are polluting on every level, the worst stuff, right? But the worst part about it is the arrests that they would make, or they would combat these guys, they would take them to jail, and because they weren't American citizens, they were basically just let free. So where do they go? They go right back to what they were doing, or they get exported and then they come back across the border and just do it again, you know? So it's like it's a revolving cycle to the point where he had arrested, you know, the same person multiple times for the same exact thing, because there's no judicial, I can't say that word. There's no justice system set up to combat this, right? Because it's kind of like a hidden, it's why it's called hidden war. And it, you know what's even crazier about it, and I don't mean to talk about this ad nauseum on your podcast, but one of the things that I learned was it's not only Mexican cartels. You would think it's just like, that's the first thing that comes to your mind is like, oh, it's the Sicario story or whatever. It's like the Mexican cartel because they're the closest to our border. Canada really doesn't have it, but it's all over, man. There's Chinese cartels. Like, it's a much bigger... There's so much profit from illegal drugs and the way that our laws are set up and everything like that. There's so much incentive to sell drugs here, and we have so much money, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm glad we don't have it in Colorado. That's
yeah. Sure. I mean, it is
least,
here.
At least not yeah. on that scale.
Yeah, I don't think it's a pretty harsh environment to try to.
I see him, I'm shooting him with a self bow. I'm gonna hit yeah. him
just... Go straight John J. Rambo on him, dude.
Dude, I'll be like,
hiding a mud wall.
John Wick. Meets Tarzan.
Yeah. Yeah, man. It's, you know, they do. And I've talked to Colorado Game and Fish about it and John a couple times about it. And they do say, if any of your listeners run across anything that's weird like this, like basically leave the area and report it as fast as possible. You can, so they can at least catch these guys before they move on or whatever. So,
time is of the essence.
Yeah. Not to mention it's a huge safety concern for anybody that's just out trying to recreate and enjoy nature, you know, like.
Yeah. Back to what you're saying, like growing up here, it's just like things that were non-issues like in our lifetime. And now things have gotten so out of control.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think that was a huge catalyst, and I've had to actually kind of take a back seat on some of that. Cause I didn't want to get like too preachy. Like I want to live through other people's experiences, and I want my listeners to gain stuff from other people's experiences. And I want to lead by example. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, the best way to communicate, how some of this stuff is happening is honestly just talk to people that are out there doing it on a regular basis, man. And like, you don't have to preach like this is, because nobody wants to listen like, this is exactly how you take a dump in the forest. You know what I mean? Like, there's definitely an etiquette to it, but it's just too, nobody's going to listen to you. It's too like cookie cutter stuff. They want a personal experience, you know?
It's too educational.
Yeah.
So what about your experience in the backcountry led you kind of to this point? Because I know you're a big backcountry hunter, really into compound bows and shooting and 3D targets and archery and all
yeah
that.
Not all the cool stuff in your guys' eyes or listeners' eyes probably. Yeah. No, for me, you know, this is something that I get a ton of hate about because I am such a passionate hunter, and now that I have a platform,
how could you?
It's weird. I get it from both sides. This really? Is the worst part, right? So I guess, and I've said this like publicly multiple times, I am no expert in hunting. I have no desire to be a influencer in the hunting space, nor have my own hunting show, or even post a picture of the animals that I take. And it's a personal preference to me, right? It's a very sacred thing to me. It was kind of how I was raised as a child. Like I have some Native American, minuscule Native American blood, but those cultures have bled over into my family and they kind of treat it that way, right? So it's more of a sacred thing to me. It's almost my religion. Nature is kind of my religion. I've never really subscribed to Christianity, or I've never really had faith in a God or anything like that. It's always just kind of been nature, because it's always been there through me, through all the adversity I've faced in my life. That is the one like constant where I've been able to, I guess you would call it, repent or get some sort of revival or something that I know makes me feel good. It's just like, if I'm having a shitty day, the best thing for me to do is go outside in the sunlight and go where there's no roads, no, hopefully no people. If there's people there, that's great. I enjoy people, man. I love people. But yeah, just being out and being, you know, taking in something that's beautiful or learning something new or taking the time to sit down and watch a hummingbird fly on the water, you know, while you're fly fishing, instead of just being there trying to catch a big trout, you know? So like taking in those little moments and just really, I urge people to really experience nature, right? Because I think that we can easily go into it and you have a phone and it's great to get the photo for the gram and all that sort of stuff. But like genuinely experience it, man. Like just take a minute to look around. We live in a world that everything's so fast paced and everything's at your disposal. You can easily just go to the grocery store and get whatever you want. You can easily go and get entertainment anywhere you want. It's at your fingertips. I think there's a lot of lessons to learn to just kind of sit back and just enjoy it for a minute, you know, like,
I don't think people know how to now though. I think there's honestly, there's a knowledge gap there. And I see it a lot in the courses that I teach. A lot of what people are learning is what I would call like wilderness awareness and connection. So it's not straight up skills all the time, although the skills are a piece of it, but it's like how to interact with nature. How do I, like foraging, for example, is an interaction. And the next time you go to forage that plant that you learned at your class, you go and you see it on the side of the road and you're like, that's that same plant. I ate that plant. That's literally next to my car tire. Like I can eat that. That's like the interaction.
That's so cool.
But you lose it. It's a muscle you have to exercise. Like if you're not practicing the awareness of nature, you're just going to walk through it and you'll always feel like a visitor.
100%. And I guess that's why I haven't really like posted pictures of me hunting. Like I'll post pictures of me in the backcountry. I guess that's not true. I got invited on one of Donnie's bison experiments through CU Boulder, stone tool experiment. And I was really just there for the muscle, not the scientific value, but yeah, that, so like I did post some stuff about that. So it's not 100% true, but for me personally, that is my time to unplug from the podcast, my own family. I do go out with a Garmin inReach because I do like to have that connectedness to my wife. But there's an understanding there, you know, unless somebody's dying or lost a limb or you guys are in dire need, I am not leaving the woods for 2 weeks. That's my plan, right? That I'm not leaving the backcountry. I'm probably, even if you did hit me up on this, I'm probably only, you know, 2 days from a car and getting anywhere. So like, you know, that hopefully that's the deal. If everything's set up and I'm with a good group of people.
I had one for the first time, a Garmin for the first time. I borrowed it from a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And I had never used one before and I ended up having to use it.
Really?
Isn't that weird that I've gone on all these crazy trips and never had to use it? And
then dude, it's like, every gig, every backpack trip I've ever been on, like if I pack my rain gear, and this isn't true for backpacking trips, but like if I pack my rain gear, it's pretty much probably not going to rain. Now, September archery season in Colorado, you're going to get rained on, right? But man, if I forget it, it's going to rain all day long, you know? So like, that's kind of crazy. Yeah. That's wild. You had to SOS off of it or like?
Not SOS, but I had to call Lauren on top of the San Juans.
Mm-hmm.
I had caught COVID, or I had like incubated COVID the first day of this fastest known time attempt. And by day three, I was so delusional that I had full auditory hallucinations. So
holy
all
shit.
I could hear in both ears was Lauren's alarm going off, her like alarm that she wakes up to for work. And I was on the top of the Continental Divide trail.
No mushrooms, right?
No mushrooms.
Damn it.
Nothing. And just fully hallucinating auditory. I could still see. And then I was on the Colorado Trail, which is a one-track trail.
That yeah. goes east to west. I know exactly where it's at.
I got lost on the Colorado Trail, which it goes one direction.
Right.
It's one trail.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was pretty messed up.
Wow. Well, sounds like it's a good thing you had it then, huh?
Yeah. And yeah. I have a lot of respect for people who are like, I'm always going to have this with me because I get it.
You know, it goes back to me having kids. That's the only reason I ever really got it, right? Because for me, someday my dream is that I have no responsibilities and I can just walk off into the woods. And if I'm never seen again, that's great. I hate saying that publicly, but that's a dream, right? But I think you would have to have like a full life that I'm never going to leave my kids behind, right? Like I'm invested in that for life, right? Like that's not going to happen. But I think, you know, having children and stuff has changed that perspective. I guess that was a young man's dream. It's not my dream anymore.
Right.
And part of that was because nature was the only thing that ever really kind of gave me security. So going kind of back to your question a few minutes ago about the backcountry and where my passion kind of came in for that. You know, I think that the biggest adversity I've ever faced in my life has been in the backcountry, like the story that you just explained, you know, like you never know it can be a life or death situation out there, right? Like, I think having a Garmin inReach is great, man. I urge everybody to get it, but I also urge them to have the training to navigate without that, or to have an action plan without that, or to, cause shit goes wrong, man. That thing has a battery life. Like who knows how long you're going to be out there. When you hit that SOS button, it is a false sense of safety. It doesn't mean that a helicopter is going to come swoop you up in an hour.
Yeah.
You're talking, it could be days before somebody
sure.
gets to you, you know, depending on the severity of it. But yeah, with young children, man, like, and they're fairly inexpensive. I think they're like $300 maybe for the actual unit. Mm-hmm. And then if you get just the emergency system might actually still work. With it without paying for the additional service. Like it's a service fee, like a cell phone plan.
Like a subscription.
Yeah, but it's very cheap. It's like $14 a month or something like that. And you can turn it on and off when you want. So like I turn mine on typically around March, and then I turn it off typically around November because I'm not in the backcountry that much, you know, these winter months. And
I think it's a great thing to have. I don't know why I have a natural affinity.
Yeah, because you're a primitive survival guy, dude. Like, I mean, I get it. Like, I as much as I love having that thing, and honestly, when I go out, the only reason I take it for me, well, that's not true. The reason why I take it hunting is I've become a little bit reliant on it, man. Like, I mark waypoints. I mark mm-hmm. wallows. I mark, you know, last blood. It's huge because a lot of times that, when I'm tracking an animal, it's pitch black dark. Mm-hmm. So having that has been, it's been so helpful, man. Like trying to find blood in the dark, you know, especially if you didn't hit an animal really like in the vitals really good, or, you know, heart shot or something like that. These elk can go miles.
Yeah. And miles. Probably you're using like one of those little headlamps.
Like a little headlamp. Like, yeah.
You know, you shoot it in somebody's backyard of their ranch, like you just bring a spotlight out. Like,
yeah.
You don't get to do that when you're at 12,500 feet.
No, and you know, a lot of the times when I have taken elk or deer, you know, if you've done any sort of hunting, and especially archery hunting, you watch the moon cycles, right? It's that surfer mentality. The moon means everything. If it's a full moon, good luck, man, because those elk are moving at night and that sort of thing. So a lot of times when I've killed elk has been when it's not a full moon, you know, so there's very little light.
Yeah. And you're probably hitting them either last thing, like last light or first.
Yeah. It never happens in the middle of the day.
Very rarely. Yeah,
never. Yeah. For me anyways.
Yeah.
So, and that's another thing. I think that's why I get hate. You know, we've had some supporters, and a lot of our audience has been driven at the mountainside through, like, Cameron Haynes has been a huge supporter. Awesome guy. Is so gracious with his time. and just a bucket list guest for me. You know, I don't know that we'll ever set that up or he'll ever agree to it. But has reshared the podcast, you know, and stuff like that. So we have kind of that, those hardcore hunters that listen.
Yeah.
And then they hear me talk about bow hunting and then I get called a fake or something, you know, cause I don't post, I'm not a grip and grin photo type of guy. I'm typically not, hunting big bulls, you know, like as much as I want to take a big mature bull, it's a meat thing for me, man. Yeah. Primarily it's a dietary thing. And, also an example for my kids, I think is more importantly, like, I think the biggest lesson, like going back to my childhood that I learned, from being young and naive and stuff like that. When you, the first time you see a large animal, like an elk or a deer or a bear or a mountain lion or whatever it is, it could even be a hog or anything like that. You see that field dressed and boned out and like you see the anatomy, you see the amount of blood, you see the life leave something. That is a life lesson, man. It puts a value on life, food, spirit. Yeah, I mean, whatever your religious beliefs are, you know, I'm a 260-pound grown-ass man that still cries in the middle of the woods, you know, when shit goes down. And I don't always feel good about it, you know?
I totally relate, and I think it's important to bring that gap between where we are and where our food comes from shorter and shorter and shorter. And I see it happening now, like in the wilderness skill space, because I'm in this like kind of small remote community, because people are like, oh, that's great. Bobby goes out and like hunts his food, so he field dresses them. But I'm not going to hunt because that's not my thing. Like, what other avenues do I have? And so that's why I think like these butchery classes or austere cooking classes, oh, yeah, stuff like that, just to make sure that you have your hand on an animal when the life leaves that animal's body. Like, I think that part of it is so important. Even if you don't want to hunt, just being close to an animal that was raised locally and being there for the actual act of the kill, the butchery, using the animal's resources after the animal's gone, I think all of that is nearly as beneficial.
I think at a young age, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think that, man, I really think, and this is just my own brain thinking, me thinking out loud, is like, there's so much violence in this world now, and we're seeing it more and more, especially now that we have, you know, groups advocating for defund the police and all these restrictions put on first responders and stuff like that. You know, there's more bad people out there operating and doing what they know how to do and stuff like that. And I just feel like if you can catch kids at a young age. And especially, let's think about kids that don't get opportunities in nature, right? Like, so if you live in the inner city of Chicago, there's not a chance that you have ever been in the middle of the forest and are field dressing a deer. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would say it's what, maybe 1%? And I don't know. I'm not a fat guy.
1% of 1% of 1%.
Right. So, like, I just think that exposing young children to things like that is not a bad, although it's gruesome, it is graphic in imagery. You know, I'm not saying like every school should go out and just blast an elk and then have to field dress it, but I think that there's some really, it made me appreciate life as a young kid and think before I actually pull the trigger on something. Like, is this something that you want to do? You know, to the point where I even had an experience, I think it wasn't this hunting season, it was last hunting season. And man, if I'm just not feeling it, I still don't even like, I mean, you know how stupid deer are when they rut. They are, they think about one thing only, and that's does, man. And it just kind of took some of it out of it for me. You know, I was, I get why you and Donnie and some of these other people that pursue that primitive, like flint napping, hunt this way with an atlatl. Like, I totally understand that, man. I, I, I totally get it, because it's so much harder to be successful at hunting or successful at eating, right? At some point it could come down to that with the way that you guys are going into some of these situations in the backcountry. But if it was just easy, if it was just like going down to the store and grabbing your cellophane wrapped steak, and you didn't have to work for it, you didn't have to field dress it, you didn't have to hike in 5 miles, you didn't have to stock in on it for a half a day, you weren't dehydrated, you know, like that, all those sort of things just kind of put a value on life in general, whether you're actually killing the animal or not. Like, how far did you have to go to get something? Mm-hmm. What did you have to go through? Will you waste it now? Like, I don't waste any of my game meat at all. There's some more parts that I could probably use. Yeah, I cut off the legs and I throw those, you know, like I'm trying to pack meat out in a really fast manner so it doesn't spoil a lot of times in September and stuff like that. But I even take like the rib meat, the neck meat. A lot of guys leave that stuff behind. You know, the tenderloins are sought after, the back straps are sought after, and then legally you have to take all four quarters, right? But there's a ton of meat that's left over besides that, right? There's a lot.
Yeah.
So taking that, whether it's feeding my dog or me, and then even, you know, refining that down once you're cooking it at home, I'm still saving all those trimmings. My dog's still getting all those trimmings, or we're putting it into a stew or a, you know, something to use for later, man. There's a ton of different ways. And I think the only reason I have that connection with it is because of what I went through to go get it or to have it. Like, I don't think you can get that connection unless you face some sort of adversity. If it's just,
you either raise it or you hunt it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was a really cool one that went viral, like on the internet, that my mom sent me. It's this guy, you know, those like Home Depot carts. He's rolling in a big Alaska moose into a school on a Home Depot cart. He was the teacher, and he
need that out. Costco cart, dude.
Yeah, exactly. he put a big moose and rolled it into the classroom. They field dressed. No, I think he shot it. They field dressed it. He left the hide on. So they basically quartered it, deboned it, processed it, grinded it, everything with the kids in this class. And I mean, they were like elementary school kids.
Yeah.
And some people were furious and other people were like, that is awesome. Every school should do that.
They totally should, man. What I was getting back to is that inner city or something like that, because it puts a value on a life. The last thing I would want to do, like I don't like hurting animals, dude. I love animals. I love animals maybe even more than people at some points, you know, because they're just genuinely themselves, man. Like if you've ever experienced that, like the reason why I love elk hunting is it's not killing the elk. Like that's not it. It is being in the middle of aspen trees and having bulls coming in at all directions with their, you know, their war cries, basically, when they're bugling and it sounds like Jurassic Park, man. It's so cool. It's like you're living out there with dinosaurs, man, and they're such an impressive, incredible animal, you know? So to have respect for that in general, and it really puts you in your place as a human. Like if you want to be put in your place as a human, go into the ocean and swim with some like a whale, a shark, no cages, no nothing like that. Even just go on a paddleboard and have a gray whale swim underneath you. That puts it in perspective real quick, you know, or have a sea lion show you his teeth while you're in the middle of a wave. You know, like that is, humans are totally out of their element. And that's one thing that I do get in nature as well, is that like, it checks my ego, right?
Yeah.
And there's moments out there where I lose it. Like, I'm no saint. Like, yeah, you fall down a mud hill 6 times and you've gotten nowhere and now your bow's full of mud and like your arrows are, you know, bent and whatever else is going on. Like, now you don't have dry clothes for however many days. Like, yeah, I'm going to be pissed, dude. Like, but that's my own fault, you know? So it's like, who have you got to be mad at? You can't blame that on anybody. You can't blame it on trees or the weather or the, like, none of that matters, man. Like, so there's no excuses. That's another thing I think that it's just, that's why I have a passion for it. And that's why I totally disconnect other than that Garmin. And really it's a false sense of safety for my wife that she could like at least know where I'm at. Cause I think she's more worried about me than I am about them, you know, being out there. The past few years I've gone solo, which is, it's awesome, man. Like I love my family members. I really love going out with them, getting to spend some time, but to me, and I know this sounds selfish, the best vacations I've ever been on, some of the best hunting experiences I've ever been in, some of the scariest things that have ever happened to me has been when I'm by myself.
Yeah.
Because you're in your own head, man.
Nothing it's like, really like yeah. it. You can't simulate a solo. Like, it's just such a different experience. And you have to have a fair amount of confidence in your abilities to get there. You have to be fairly confident in your physical abilities, your abilities to withstand the pressure of the situation. And honestly, the biggest one is the psychological capabilities you have to possess. Like,
especially if you're going days on end, man.
Yeah, if you're doing a
there's been a few minutes where I've been out there and I'm just like, what am I thinking about right now? Like, this is not a normal thought. Like, you know, you got to put yourself in check.
Yeah, but I always come out of those with deep amounts of gratitude for people that I've either haven't told I love enough, or somebody that I screwed over, or something I did wrong at one point. And I'm always coming out of a solo like, hey, I love you. I just want you to know that. Like, been thinking about it for roughly 72 hours and almost nothing else. Wanted to let you know.
Cause that's a great,
you don't get that when you have a phone and you're scrolling on social media.
No, not at all, man. Like, you do come out of it. I always say it fills my heart. And it does with love, because I've had those same experiences that you've just had. And I think a lot of people do, man. Like, it makes you really appreciate a warm bed, a shower, a hug, you know, like anything, or just seeing your kids or whatever, man. Like, it's it definitely fills my heart, and that's why I really pursue it and take the time to pursue it. And that's one thing that I want my children to pursue. I would never force it on them, but fortunately their children are easily influenced, so you have to be a good role model, right? Like, that's I think the most important thing. I think that's a big thing that parents are missing today, man. Like, and I'm no perfect parent, so like I'm really bad parent, honestly, man. If you like chalked it up between like me and whoever the best parent in the world is, I'm way down the list, right? But I think being conscious and just being present in the moment, and I think in podcasting I get that, in nature I get that. So taking my kids fly fishing and you know, having them experience that, and there's no screens or distractions or anything like that. You're just kind of enjoying nature, and then taking the time to be like, hey, let's watch this bumblebee and see how he works. You know, like, that's so cool. That those are memories that those sort of trips and stuff. And I was very fortunate not growing up with a dad that I had uncles and my grandfather and stuff that were good outdoor influences and super into Native culture and Native American philosophies, and kind of back before it was popular, you know, like, and instilled those in me, I guess, a little bit.
You plan on taking your kids hunting like anytime soon?
Mm-hmm.
How old are they again?
So my 13-year-old daughter, not a chance.
Not interested.
Yeah, not interested. I get it. Will she sit there and help me butcher, though? 100%, man. She's if she had to, could she? Oh yeah, 100%. Can she shoot a bow? Yeah. I haven't really introduced guns to them. That's something that I'm not anti-gun. I've been I'm just not a guy to like carry a gun around, man. I think that I don't hunt with a gun for personal reasons. I just feel like you're almost more unsafe having a gun on you. Like, I know there's a ton of people that go out and conceal carry, and like, it's a crazy world that we're living in. We might be in a shooting or something, but you're almost more unsafe carrying that gun around, you know, than you are. And it doesn't mean that I'm anti-gun or anti-Second Amendment or anything like that. I think everybody should have them. Like, I own a ton of guns, right? but I guess it's just something I wanted the time and the experience and the place to be right, because that's how I was taught. And I was taught it was a responsibility. And then I was given that responsibility at a really young age. I think I owned my first rifle at like, I might've been 8 years old.
Wow.
And, yep. It was a 22, but still that can, it has just as much, put down power, you know,
yeah.
if you use it right, as a high powered rifle does. But I think it was the responsibility of it, you know, like it was the, that fear of messing up. Mm-hmm. Right. So yeah, I want them to experience that. But yeah, my sorry to answer your question, my daughter definitely could hunt. She has no desire to, right? She's got her own life. She's a teenager now. She's doing or pursuing her own things. Has been fishing with me, has been out, you know, chasing elk. She loves all that. She loves to eat meat. So the whole butchering process, she loves bison backstraps. She loves elk. She loves deer, you know, like that. She's like, are we having steak tonight? Those are always the questions from my daughter who, you know, dances ballet professionally. So like everybody else that she's around is vegans, you know? So like you do have an influence on your kids, and having the right influence. And I'm not saying diet. I mean, diet is a good influence, but not, they don't have to eat meat, right? Like just being, them knowing where the food came from and having that appreciation for it, I think is the biggest thing.
Yep.
My son, totally gonna hunt. He already wants to hunt. The problem is he started playing football, and he's got a passion for football. I don't know if you played high school football. Sure. Or yeah, and then if you take it to the next level, if you go to college or something like that, which I never did, there's no time for hunting.
Mm-hmm.
There's tough. None, man, like that. The hunting season is football season.
Yeah, it's true.
So yeah, it's really hard to hunt. But yeah, I think we're gonna probably, with my son, you know, I gave him the option to, I got him into shooting bows because that's my favorite thing to do. And it's kind of a meditation for me. I consider it almost like a martial art or something like that. Like I have a whole mantra and a shot sequence and a thing that I put into it to make me a better archer, even at the compound level.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I'm using a lot of mechanical advantage and sights and range finders and all that, you know, modern stuff, it is very much driven back to almost kind of like a primitive mindset with mm-hmm. it and what I get out of it. So my son, I gave him the choice. I was like, okay, I would like you to get into archery. Let's go down to the archery range and let's just shoot and see if you like it. He loved it, right? And I don't, you know, Tom Klum, right? We talked about this before. Yeah. Shout out to Tom. Tom's been a huge mentor to me because of me not growing up with a dad. He's almost kind of like that father figure. Sometimes I'll ask him for fatherly advice because his two sons, and I don't know if you know Danny and Tom Jr.
I've met Dan.
Yeah.
But I never met Tom.
Dude, they're badasses, man. These guys are salt of the earth, gentlemen. They're not out there cursing, like, drinking beer, shooting beer can type of dude. These are just real backwoods dudes that grew up on a wrestling mat. I mean, they're real men. They're humble. They help people, you know, like it, they're just awesome kids. So I'm like, that all stemmed from Tom and his wife, you know, yeah. and their family and some of those ethics and some of the ways that they've taught. And now it's cool, really cool to see all of Tom's like grandchildren run around, because I really looked up to Danny and stuff. I guess I'm a little bit older than Danny, but still as a mentor, just like what he went through wrestling wise. And so like a Division I wrestler and just like their mindset and the elk that they've taken traditionally. And like, I mean,
yeah,
real badasses. Right. So I asked Tom, I was like, how do I keep my kids interested in the outdoors? And he was like, man, make them comfortable. Don't be hard on them. He was like, get them the nice sleeping bag, you know, like when they want to leave, leave,
mm-hmm.
you know, and make them leave before they want to leave.
Mm.
So he's like, you got to treat them like a bird dog. And I don't know if you've ever done any like waterfowl hunting or pheasant hunting or anything like that. But one of the ways that you train a bird dog is you always take them away from whatever the stimulant it is. Sure. And this goes for police dogs, special operations dogs. You always take them away from it before they get bored with it or they don't want to be there.
So
right?
They want to come back. Yeah.
So they want to come back. So that's, those little triggers is what I've done it with fly. Is the best advice I've ever gotten as a father. So it's been able for me to manipulate my kids, which sounds really bad, into the hobbies that I'm into and the things that I want them to experience. It doesn't mean that I don't pursue what they want to do, but yeah, it helps when your hobbies align and they're the same. So my son, I was like, I can either get you a compound bow or a traditional bow. It's your choice. We went to Rocky Mountain Specialty Gear. And I gave him the choice, and he went trad. So it's awesome. We go up to the archery range together. He's shooting trad. He gives me a hard time because I shoot my compound, you know. And he's quite the little archer and, you know, loves to eat game meat and stuff. And I'm always, like football, I've always or anything that my kids pursue, I always make them come to me. I never say, like, this is what we're going to go do or, like – I like those spontaneous moments to take them like, hey, we're going to go for a hike. But I don't say like, we are going fly fishing. You're going with me. I give them the option. Mm. And then a lot of times I let them come to me and it's like, Dad, when are we going to go to the archery range again? Or when are we going to go fly fishing? Or we haven't gone fly fishing yet. It's getting warm out or what, you know,
yeah,
those sort of things. So I think that's been the biggest shout out to Tom. You know,
yeah, those guys are
kudos great. I've ever gotten from anybody or advice, and just lead by example, man. Those guys are prime examples of that, of leading by example. So yeah, I think my son probably, I don't know, he's playing football now. It's his number one passion. He's training in the off season. He's going to all these, you know, football camps and stuff like that. So yeah, we'll have to see what the future holds. But yeah, he wants to get out there. He wants to go hunt elk. And I think we'll probably go for a turkey first because I think it's probably the closest thing to elk hunting, you know, at this age. But no hunter safety yet. My youngest is 6. She's the one that worries me. She's the biggest savage of us all. So she might be a little bloodthirsty, son. I'm not sure if I'm even going to show her yet.
Yeah. Yeah. She might wait a little bit.
Definitely the one that needs to come on the field dressing experience before she goes hunting because, yeah.
She might like it a little too much.
She can shoot a bow traditionally. She can shoot an airsoft gun. Like she's awesome, man.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I think it's sweet that you have a resource like Rocky Mountain Specialty Gear, because you know, when I didn't grow up shooting, I got into archery, primitive archery, all that stuff on my own, and I had no idea where to go. I had never been to an archery shop. I actually didn't even know that an archery shop existed. All I could find was like the primitive Bowyer's Bible, read it cover to cover, and you know, looking online and trying to find people like that. But to actually have someone boots on the ground that they're like, you know, 10 legit experts selling.
It's not even 10 legit experts down there. It's the years of experience, man. Like, yeah, if you put it all together, they probably have hundreds of years of experience in there. Like, do you know Jerry that works down there?
The OG?
Yeah, man. Like, that guy's probably in his 70s, right? Yeah. And he's been bow hunting since he was a kid. And then you have Tom, probably has 40 to 50 years of experience. Like,
yeah,
it's unbelievable, man.
It really is. And to have that, like, boots on the ground experience, it makes me kind of excited because, you know, when the internet comes out, it wipes out all these businesses, and a lot of them, you know, probably will never exist again in the same capacity. But a place like Rocky Mountain Specialty Gear or a similar archery shop where really the reason you're going there to buy gear is because you want to talk to that guy. You want that guy to help you not make a bunch of mistakes.
Yeah.
You want that guy as a mentor or a friend so that you can expedite your learning process. And you can't do that online. You can't order on Amazon and get Tom Klum 5-minute conversation, add to cart. You know, that's not how it works.
Yeah, no, I think it's super important, man. Other people's experiences, other people's perspective, I think, is really big. I think that's something that's missed today. You know, a lot of people don't know this, but Rocky Mountain Specialty Gear, the only reason that they're probably still in business, and I'm sorry, Tom, if I'm speaking for you, but I think that they are the largest traditional archery supplier in the U.S. or shop. And they do a ton of online sales and online procurements of bows, like people putting bows on consignment. Like they are, there's a whole nother business that's like upstairs of that. And I'm so grateful for that for them, because they probably still wouldn't be in business, you know, like that is a rough business, man. Like, but yes, Tom's expertise is definitely the other half of that, right? And the driving force, and it being a family owned run, like, business is so cool. And he's been there. So I've known Tom since I was a kid, like really. And the amount of love and, just, non-judgment when you walk through the door down there is really cool. And that, I think that that's a huge, component. If you're owning an outdoor store or something like that, it's very easy to like, to have an ego and, treat people like they're inferior because they don't know. Right. And that happens at some other archery shops and especially fly fishing shops. And, you know,
Fly fishing's a big one.
Yeah. It's a big one, man. It's like, if you're, you know, just let these people experience it, man, because if we don't, it's not going to be around that much longer. If you don't get new people into this, like, we're already starting to see it dwindle pretty heavily. And I think that that's one positive thing that happened during the pandemic, is it raised a lot of people's heads. Like, shit, man, what if it really did go down? Could I get my own food? Could I catch a fish? Could I hunt? Yeah. And I, you know, shout out to all the influencers like yourself and Donnie and like Jeremiah Wilbur that I just had on, and Joe Rogan and Cameron Haynes and Derek Wolf and all these guys that are putting hunting kind of at the forefront, whether they're doing it with a compound or a rifle or whatever, man. I think it's really cool that they are a positive role models in that, and the way that they portray it, and using social media to do that, man, to show people it's possible, man. I think that it might be the only reason it's kind of still around right now. Because it's slow, it's still diminishing, you know.
I think it's, you make a good point, which is it's important to make the beginners comfortable, because if not, the food chain kind of stops. And we see it all the time in skills courses. People, they'll see a course listing online and they'll have an idea of who's going to that course. Like, probably looks like you, like Bobby, who grew up in Colorado, is going to learn skills at a course. But the reality is, it's like there's a ton of beginners. There's all different places of starting points, whether it's for hunting or backcountry snowboarding or whatever outdoor activity it is. And the key is just to make everyone feel comfortable on that learning curve, because if not, then the pipeline kind of dries up.
Just be nice, man. There's no fucking reason not to be. Just be a good person and just be nice to people, man. Don't, you know, people all have their own hurdles. We don't know what goes on in everybody's life. Even my best friends, I don't know what they're dealing with, you know, every day, every minute, what's going through their mind. Just be nice to people, man. Like, I don't care how big of a badass you are or what you've done or what you've accomplished or whatever. I think part of, staying humble and just being, a good person is just be nice to people, man. Like, it just doesn't take a lot of effort. And I don't see how it makes anybody feel good to belittle somebody because they don't know something, man. Like, I'm a firm believer in learning. And I think that that's why the mountainside is still going, man, because I learn something on every episode, every guest that I have in, every, you know, I genuinely learn something or take something away from that. And I'm a fiend for it, whether it's through audiobooks or listening to other podcasts or spending time with my kids teach me stuff now. You know, it's like, I didn't pay that good of attention in school, you know? So I'm relearning how to do calculus or whatever, you know, like sometimes. So
what's the, like, is there an upcoming episode of the Mountainside or one that's recently happened that you recommend people definitely check out, or a guest that you're excited about, something like that?
Oh man, they're all good. And I try to keep the guests, you know, I built kind of a community with it. So we have recurring guests and stuff like that. And I genuinely don't bring anybody on that I don't want to talk to. I have a ton of people that hit me up that want to be on the podcast. And this isn't that I'm better than anybody or anything like that, but it's like, I don't want to have a conversation. I don't want to spend 3 hours with somebody that I'm not interested in. God, it sounds so bad. It sounds like I have this really big ego, but it's just, I think that that's what resonates with people is the human connection more than just like the content or what you're listening to. And if you learn something, right? So that's super important to me. So if I'm not learning anything or I don't feel like I'm going to get anything out of the conversation, then I don't have the guest on. So really, it's crazy. We just crossed 150 episodes, which is a milestone for me. You know, we're 4 years in. I had no idea it was going to go this long. It's just kind of been winging it. And it hasn't been easy, you know, but it's been great. It's been an awesome experience across all those episodes. I've had a couple bad episodes, you know, I've had a couple bad experiences. I've gotten letters from the U.S. government to redact an episode because we talked about too much. There's, you know, so like some of those experiences are super cool. But man, really just listen to them all. Just don't go listen to the early ones because I was such a bad host and I would interrupt people. How many episodes, what episode is this going to be?
This is like,
or around,
it's going to be like early 50s.
Dude, you're an awesome host, man, because even at early 50s, man, I'm just like the background that I have and, you know, having the mic and that sort of pressure, like I'm a big dumb guy and I just want to talk, you know? So I'll just like, if a thought comes into my head, you know, I was really, really bad at interrupting. And I think what I've learned over that 150 episodes is just to sit back and listen sometimes is the best way to have a conversation.
Yeah. I was forced into that. I wouldn't say it's like thanks to myself. I started on Instagram Live and anytime the other person starts talking, it kind of like cuts the other audio off and there's like this break. So when you're doing them on Instagram Live, you kind of have to have like a stream of consciousness, let that person get it out, and then bring up the next question. Like right now, you and I can both talk into the mic. It'll be a little muffled, but you know, you can do that. Instagram Live kind of made me the other way. So maybe it was a blessing and a curse. I don't think it's anything due to me being a good listener.
No, you're a good host, man. I enjoy it. I listen to you guys. I listen, you know, to as many podcasts as I can. It's hard for me to take them all in, so I haven't listened to every episode, but I really like the content that you're putting out. The way that you present it, the people that you have on, the guests that you have on, I feel like they align with the mountain. I'm always interested, man. Mm-hmm. And you're such a good host. I wish I was as good as you at like 50 episodes or something, but yeah, man, go back and just check it out, man. If there's something of interest, we've had everything from archaeologists to Colorado Parks and Wildlife to primitive survival experts like yourself, a lot of former special operations military guys, whether they were SEALs, Green Berets, that are all just doing extraordinary things, man, like with their lives and giving me different perspective on things. I, you know, the podcast has changed my mind a couple times. You know, I used to be the cliche guy that was saying, you know, everything happens for a reason, da 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 da, you know. And I've had some people change my perspective on that. I think, you know, my biggest thing that the people that I have on are very like an alpha mentality, whether it's a female or a male that's on the podcast. It's just kind of that leader mentality. Like they take control of whatever situation that they're in. And I think that what I figured out over that 150 episodes is they're the most honest people because they're not afraid to disagree with you. They're not afraid to tell you what they honestly feel. They're authentic and, you know, yourself included. And I think that there's so much value in that from what I learned, right? Because nobody wants to have somebody just come on and just agree with you on everything, you know? Like it's a bit of a volley. It's okay to have a conversation. It doesn't have to be Trump versus Biden war, you know, left versus right or whatever is going on in social media, you know? I think that it's okay to have some disagreements and talk it out, and you can still have a drink or go for a hike or, you know, have a hug after the podcast, you know, whatever. Like,
yeah,
it's okay to disagree with people.
Almost like, it feels like having a podcast is like kind of like a master's degree. Like, I feel like I've had so many people on here who have just taught me so much. Like, in other words, I'm not even at the point of agreeing yet because I still don't even fully understand what the hell you just said. So, I'm like learning, dude, from all these people,
yeah,
every episode, and just like trying to take in as much as I can. Be like, wow, okay, that was really interesting. How do I even follow up with a question that continues the conversation?
It's okay, man. A little bit of dead air just to sit there and think and reflect, mm-hmm, is all right, I think. Like, that's one thing that we don't get crazy with post-production. We are starting to step up some of our production value as far as like clips, and it's other people getting involved with the podcast too that want it to be bigger, so I can't fault that, right? Like, mm-hmm, it is kind of a full-time business for me now, right? Like, wow. And if I want to keep it going, I have to have, as much as I don't want to care about any of that, you do have to care about that a little bit. But yeah, you know, I think it's all right to have that rawness. And I've always just kind of, I haven't really edited anything unless my guest has asked me to take something out. So I've left in all the filler words. I've left in the pauses on air, you know, like, I think those are all human emotions, and it's a natural way to have a conversation, man. Like, you don't, I think it's just like social media. If you're the, pardon my language, but if you're the fuck boy posing with his shirt off, you know, and like, look at my Lambo, but it's really not your Lambo type of mentality, and you overproduce something, it then kind of loses its context, and then it doesn't make it real for anybody else when they're having a conversation, right? So
I want to dive into something you just said.
Yeah.
Well, first, I can agree that you do leave that stuff in because I forgot my own YouTube page name.
We were, oh, searching, damn, dude,
on the podcast. You're like, what's your YouTube? I was like, I don't know.
Yeah, I've left it wrong. You know, and you know who I've used as a mentor, and I'm just going to say it publicly, man, because there's no shame in it, and I think he's the best at it, was I just modeled the show behind what Joe Rogan was doing. And
yeah.
It seemed like to me, and I really dove in and really listened, and it's ruined podcasting for me. I used to be a huge fan of it. Now I dissect it in myself and everything. Not that I don't like to listen to it, but I just listen to it in a different way.
For sure.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've gone back and forth with Joe a couple times and stuff, but like, I haven't really had a chance to ask him whether he knows he's a mentor to me or not, but I'm pretty sure that they don't edit anything. It's just like, come in, hit record, and this is what it is. And if you don't like it, I think that's the best. I've never lost any sleep over, like, did I betray myself? And it's always been in the back of my mind. Like, before I started the podcast, I went to my family, my immediate family, was like, this is what I'm going to do. This might put you in the limelight at some point if it gets to the point where maybe I want it to go, and I'm going to be open and personal, and you're probably going to hear me tell stories that I haven't even told you. And they have, you know, people have learned about me. So it's like a higher consciousness or an easier way to be vulnerable, I feel like, when you're in a podcast setting for some reason.
Yeah, you definitely put yourself out there, and I've had this now a little bit in the racing space or the wilderness space, where somebody will come up to me and start talking to me, and I'm like, I have no idea who this person is. Am I supposed to know who it is? And then they'll be like, yeah, and like, I listen to your podcast all the time. I'm like, oh, like,
I'm sorry you were as abused as a child. I'm like, oh, dude. I'm like,
yeah, like, you know,
dude, I was not ready for that. I was here like having a good time with the boys, you know?
But they know things about you, like, on a friendship level, because, you know, they hear the pod, and I think that's awesome.
It is so cool, man. Like, I am so grateful for all of that, man. It's really, and I lose sight of that sometimes because you just get caught up in the conversation like I am now. You forget that. God, I don't know how many, you have 100,000 followers or whatever you have might listen to this, you know, but I never let that enter the back of my mind. I've always just tried to stay authentic with it. So sometimes I forget it when I get into like a public space. and I'm no superstar or anything, but I do get recognized every once in a while, or I run into a fan here or there, especially a lot of the people that listen to me are into the same things that I'm into, and right. They have a personal connection, and I have to remember, like, they've invested hours listening to me. So really they are a friend. Like, so what I've really tried to do with it is take the approach of just like, learn about them. Like, I'm not going to talk about myself or the podcast. Like, I want to know about you. Like, So I just start grilling them. I've gotten really good at asking questions. So I just start grilling them with questions. Mm-hmm. And it's cool, man. I've met some awesome people.
That's amazing.
Yeah. That have helped support me, you know, so.
So you're full time now at the pod. This is.
Yeah, I say that, but yeah, it's definitely taken over. I used to have to take, you know, I still work in entertainment if there's a big enough carrot dangled. Yeah. But I'm really trying to figure out a way to just, it seems like, for example, I was just working on Formula One in Vegas, right? And it's cool. I did two production jobs last year. So that was pretty good, right? Like, wow. As opposed to where I used to just have to chase it, man. I would go from like the Super Bowl halftime to, I guess post rock and roll touring, to Supercross to whatever else was going on, you know, these big kind of like corporate major sporting events, NBA type stuff and events and doing live production work, for those. But as a freelance person, you know, it's hard. You got to chase your dollars, man. It's like owning your own business, you know? And, so yeah, I've been really fortunate to have a career like that where I can just kind of like say no to some stuff, and pursue my dream at the same time. So that's what I've done over the 4 years. And I've just slowly started to kind of wean myself off of doing live production, which is, you know, it's a double-edged sword. I enjoy that work too, man. It's really gratifying work, and the people are really cool. I get to, you know, hire a lot of guys that I toured with, or they hire me. So it's like friends, you know, it's kind of that firefighter camaraderie in that business a little bit. Mm-hmm. And kind of that brotherhood. You face a lot of adversity together, So it's cool, man. It's like when I am out there, it's not bad, man. You're working on really cool shit. You're building stuff that is massive, and it's going up in unbelievable time. So like if you have a passion for woodworking or knife making or whatever, man, like I've always enjoyed seeing the finished product, and there's no industry that you see it in faster than that, man. Mm. It is crazy the amount of equipment that can be assembled and put up into just a spectacular event and stuff. And you know, like I was just in Vegas working on the Formula One race, doing some production rigging out there, or managing some production rigging for the around the track, doing some lighting like towers and stuff. So I didn't really even have that big of a part. But, you know, just interacting with the city police and, you know, we were working outside of the new Sphere. I don't know if you've seen that in Vegas.
The one they're going to have the UFC at?
Yes.
I think yeah. It's crazy.
It's cool. So am I rambling along too?
No, you're good.
Too long? Okay, cool. So yeah, we're working out there, and there's a guy, we're working around the actual Sphere. We're like on the sidewalk of the Sphere. And I was trying to figure out what was going on. There was these guys walking around in like military clothing. And then I started noticing like, oh, they have like it's a falconer, right? And it's to keep other birds and rodents out of the Sphere because it's kind of open, because they would build nests and stuff in it. So there's just full-time like mercenary falcons out there that are just murking.
No way.
Pigeons, whatever is around there, dude. There's not a
falconry license in the city limits.
They work for the Sphere,
dude. That's the job I want.
Yeah.
Are they hiring?
I don't know. No, dude, these guys were not fucking around with their falcons.
That's sick.
So one of the production riggers that I hired, shout out to Sean Douglas. He has this big giant beard, dude. This guy he was a turbine cowboy at one point in his life, like used to build the wind generators. Like he has got some wild stories, can like run a crane, but he's like the most this is just the entertainment industry. He's just the most like, wear your emotion on your sleeves. I don't give a fuck what anybody thinks. Like, just a tough guy, you know, like a real tough guy, and can make jokes and is awesome people to be around, right? But he's got this gray beard, and because of the track was so big, I actually I purchased a beach cruiser for the gig and then just gave it away at the end of the gig. But I rode that thing probably 300 miles because we had lighting stuff all around the track. So I got told I was going too fast on the track on a beach cruiser.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Kind of funny at Formula One. But Sean had a like a little electric scooter, and my manhood couldn't take me to ride one of those. So we were going back and forth. But we show up to the Sphere location for the first day, and we're bombing in there. We got a lot of stuff to do in a short amount of time. There's only so much daylight, and you know, hundreds of local labor working for us and stuff too to actually make this stuff happen in the time frame that they needed it. So he's coming in hot, and his beard, I don't know if you've been around any bikers or anything, but his beard started to part, right? Yeah. So he's coming in, and all of a sudden this falcon comes out of nowhere and tried to take his face off.
Oh my God.
He thought his beard was wings, right? Oh, and these God. Falcons are so hot. And then, so like, this is the first time we experienced, we're like, oh my God, there's a falcon. So I just thought it was like a normal like falcon. And then I see it land on a security guard's hand. And I'm like, what the hell? And then Sean starts yelling. I'm like, man, control your fucking bird and all that.
Did so, I just take a bunch of acid on accident?
Yeah.
What is going on?
So anyways, that's how I found out that there was falcons that's at hilarious. The Sphere. But yeah, I don't know. That's I'm hilarious. Sure I would just hit them up. It's Madison Square Garden actually owns the Sphere. That's I don't know amazing. If you know that.
I've always wanted to do falcons.
Yeah. They're full time there, day, night, 24. There's always a falcon somewhere out there flying.
So sick.
Yeah.
All right, man. I'm gonna ask for one question in.
Oh no.
in closing, before okay. we gotta get you out of here, but I want to know if maybe even to me, a couple years back, what's one piece of advice you would give to somebody that's considering starting a podcast?
Man, reach out to somebody that's doing it and ask a question, man. Like, I've met so many cool people. There's been so many. This is such a good community of people, or the people that I've surrounded myself with. I was very fortunate in that, and I didn't take all of their advice. I don't think you have to. I think, you know, I think one thing that makes a podcast good and not just cookie cutter stuff is just be genuine, be yourself. Be unique, have a unique idea, have a new, unique conversation, have, you know, whatever your setting is. This studio is awesome, by the way, man.
Oh,
this is
you.
Super cool.
I appreciate it.
So, yeah, I think, you know, just put your own twist on it, man. If you are a creative person, man, let those juices flow. I've always been involved in art or blacksmithing or carpentry or, you know, live entertainment. So it's just kind of a... It was really easy for me to transition into that and really have fun with it creatively. Like, what do I want my studio to look like? What's the kind of, you know, I made a ton of mistakes. I would say you don't need a whole lot to start it, man. Like, no. You need people willing to have a conversation. You don't need all the best mics and stuff like that. Jocko Willink was a huge, huge, huge mentor. You know, I think even on his website, he has like the podcast for beginners, and it's still what he records. Is it Jocko? Why am I drawing a blank right now? This is Jocko Podcast, right?
I think it's just Jocko Podcast.
On his actual website, he has listed all the equipment that you need to start, and I think it's under $1,000.
Wow.
So it's like a camera, you know, a recording, a little Zoom recorder, and then like some $100 mics. And that's what we started the Mountainside on, really, was his recommendation. And it was super cool, man. I had no idea he had that on his website.
I started super. Mine on an iPhone on top of a cardboard box.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's that easy, man. If you got, if you have, I would urge anybody to try it. If you don't gain any success out of it, it's going to make you a better person, man. You're going to learn something. You're going to learn something about yourself. Mm-hmm. You're going to learn how to really try to put yourself in somebody else's perspective, man. I think that's super important, man. I urge anybody to do it. You know, whether whether you're even have an inclination of putting it out or not, like, you can still do it. So one of the things, you know, I was saying a little bit earlier in our conversation that my two favorite places to have a conversation are in the podcast studio and in the backcountry. So one of the places that I like to experience or learn stuff from my kids is in the backcountry and kind of test them. But I've made it a fun environment that they can come into. This is something that I would never publish, but we have a conversation on mic and they enjoy it, man, because they know the podcast, people know their dad, that sort of thing. But it's like I talk with so many interesting people and stuff like that. So to put them kind of in that seat and let them know that they're just as important as any of the guests that I've had on, and the conversations that we've had in there are awesome because there are no tablets, the TV's not on, the dog's not running around, it's just like you just walk into a room and sit down, and that's what you're supposed to do. So
there you go. That's yeah. What the fathers need is just a little podcast studio.
Yeah, man. Just, record something with your kids, whether you're, I think it's really cool too. Like, the one reason why I started doing that, was kind of from an archivable spot. I was like, man, this would be so badass if I had my grandfather's dad to go listen to or something amazing. Like that. Right. Cause those are all the stories I miss. And those are from such a cool era, you know, or like, what if it went 12 generations deep, you know, or if there was a journal, like I would kill for anything like that. I think that there's so many values and so many, people in my family or your ancestry that you don't even know about. They've probably done extraordinary things and you could probably learn some life lessons from. So I've always kind of kept that in the back of my mind, I guess, a little bit with the podcast too. I think that that's why I'm so, it's not really about like growing it to where it can be a full-time job, although that would be nice and that is a goal. It's been more about like, what kind of legacy am I leaving?
That's amazing, man.
Yeah.
Well, I think you're leaving the hell of a legacy.
Oh, shit. I don't know. I'm trying, man.
Well, I appreciate you for coming out.
Yeah,
great,
man.
Conversation as always, just like hanging out with a buddy and sitting in front of some mics. So I appreciate you being here, man.
Hell yeah, man. This is awesome. Thank you so much. Keep crushing it.
If people want to follow you, where can they find you or the podcast?
Okay. So the podcast is on Instagram at the Mountainside Podcast. Really long. You got to type a lot of letters, but yeah, go on there. We don't post a whole lot on there. It's really just kind of the guests that we've had on and, some reels nowadays, which has been really cool. At YouTube, it's at the Mountainside Pod. And then I think we have a Twitter. I know we have, whatever the new Instagram Twitter version is. But yeah, mainly, those spots, but really the best place to go is the mountainsidepodcast.com. Okay. It's cool. We put everything that you would see on social media pretty much up right there. It's cool. We do all kinds of different stuff on the website. We've been really fortunate to do some like giveaways and stuff like that. So I encourage people to sign up for the email list there because that's generally how I pick people to give a half face blade to or something like that that comes out. And I'm a big fan of doing that, just kind of not making it a spectacle. So I try to pick somebody once a month to give something to without any social media involved or just to give genuinely, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's awesome. All right.
Yeah.
Man, I appreciate you.
Man, thank you. Thanks for having me, bro.
See
this is awesome.
Stay wild.
See ya.